Welcome to a special edition of the 155 Election Podcast, the Ward 8 Hamilton City Council by-election. Episode 168.
Alex Bella, you are running for city councilor in the Ward 8 by-election. Welcome to the 155 Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Joy. I appreciate it. I'm really looking forward to discussing the campaign on here.
Firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. So I am a proud Hamiltonian, have been for over a decade now. I'm a biomedical researcher and community organizer with a strong track record of housing and public health issues. And I've spent years on the front lines of housing, health, and democratic reform, including serving as co-chair of the Hamilton Acorn in the downtown chapter, which is a tenant rights group, national program coordinator of the peer wellness program at my national overdose response service position, and a volunteer with Fair Vote Canada, trying to fight for electoral reform and more fair elections. During my Master's of Medical Science and Project Management Professional certification, I also served as Vice President of the McMaster Graduate Student Association, where I led the restoration of student mental health services after my first encounter with short-sighted budget cuts, leaving people without the services they actually needed. I'm also an active volunteer with the Ontario Health Coalition, Substance Overdose Prevention and Education Network, Raise the Rates Coalition, and Hamilton Alliance for Tiny Shelters, as well as the Fair Fares Coalition for Transit Access. In short, I bring hands-on leadership, experience, and advocacy across the city, and I intend on delivering long-term campaigns for change and executive administration and project management for multiple international collaborations to this role.
Why are you running for Ward 8 councillor, and why should we vote for you?
So I'm running for Ward 8 because too many Hamiltonians are being left behind and under the current status quo. Right now, we have a housing crisis with skyrocketing rents and a cost of living that is just unmanageable. We are facing proposed cuts to transit for seniors and the disabled, multiple catastrophic wastewater infrastructure failures in the last few years, and growing awareness of closed-door decision-making at City Hall. People in Ward 8 are ready for change, and I will be putting people first, fighting for accountability, and insisting on open government. The status quo isn't working for Hamilton. This campaign is about building a city where every neighbor is heard, where affordability and community are priorities. With my background in research, tenant support, healthcare advocacy, and community organizing, I've been exercising the passion and skills to deliver real results. And I ask for your vote so that we can make a stronger, fairer Hamilton together.
Do you live in Ward 8, yes or no?
No.
What are your thoughts on residency and representation?
So like many Hamiltonians in this housing crisis, I've had to find housing where I can afford it, and usually that has been downtown. I live with roommates, and I've been running a lean grassroots campaign so we can make Ward 8 a district where people can afford to live, make the ward their home, and make it possible again for people to start families and build a life for themselves in our community. Representation is about who acts to make your life better. I'll ensure Ward 8's voice is heard at City Hall, while bringing a city-wide perspective that connects local needs to broader policy solutions. And my focus will be on listening, acting quickly, and ensuring that decisions reflect our community's vision.
What are two of your city-wide priorities for Hamilton?
Absolutely. So my top two priorities are housing affordability and fiscal sustainability and revenue diversity. So for housing and affordability, every Hamiltonian deserves an affordable home. And I'll say that again, every Hamiltonian deserves an affordable home. I will push citywide to increase housing supply and protect renters. Inspired by Mississauga's recent housing task force, I support reforms like lowering development charges and updating zoning to allow for more homes to be developed. For example, we can permit gentle intensification, things like duplexes, triplexes, laneway suites in neighborhoods, and offer incentives for affordable rental projects to developers. These changes will help to control rent and home prices and make Hamilton livable for young families, seniors, and everyone in between. And for fiscal responsibility, sustainability, and revenue diversity, Hamilton, it needs to be said, must balance its budget and build reserves for emergencies. So I will be linking spending to revenues, ensuring that each new service has a funding plan, and also that we explore modernizing our revenue sources for taxation. So for example, the recent IMFG report notes that large cities can often benefit from a mix of taxes, not just property taxes, but also user fees, and even exploring portions of income and sales taxes from the federal and provincial side of things. Rather than relying on property tax alone, we need to capture every dollar we can. And one of our most clear examples is Hamilton's $178 marriage license fee, which is currently the highest in the region. We're pushing residents to go elsewhere, costing our city over $100,000 in lost revenue in this year alone. And I would make our fees competitive and offer things like online appointments so that money stays in Hamilton and it's more convenient for people to access.
What are two of your priorities for Ward 8?
So Ward 8 is a pretty geographically large and diverse community, so it's important we take that into account. My two main priorities are road safety on Upper James and the key corridors, and also managed development and local amenities. So what we're looking at primarily is for road safety, Upper James is currently the most dangerous street in Hamilton. We have high speeds with insufficient pedestrian protection, and I'm going to focus on traffic calming and street design in Ward 8's business corridors, which will include lowering speed limits, adding crosswalk signals, and redesigning dangerous intersections. Hamilton's own Vision Zero policy states we need to make sure that people are driving at appropriate speeds because that is the most effective way at reducing the likelihood of collisions. And we must do what it takes to save lives. For my second point, managing development and local amenities, Ward 8 has seen a rise in multi-use residential complexes and other developments to meet the local housing demand. I will guide this growth so it benefits existing neighborhoods, which means requiring developers to include public amenities like parks and community spaces and affordable units in new projects. We also need better transit and safer bike and pedestrian access, connecting housing to schools and jobs, especially around regions like Mohawk College. I will help ensure that as Ward 8 grows, we get the infrastructure and services we need to improve our day-to-day life.
The city of Hamilton is facing a fiscal crisis. According to the city's own financial projections, Hamilton's discretionary reserve was forecast to be down to just $1 in 2027. The city's last fiscal update was in November 2023, so none of us know the current state of city finances. In November 2026, when the new council term begins, decisions will have to be made. What are your thoughts on this coming fiscal cliff, and how do you plan to approach budgeting?
Well, I believe it's absolutely unacceptable that we do not have access to the current budget and the other financial details that we need to make these kinds of decisions. I think that that should be something that is available to the public and that we can all make decisions based on. I think it's important to drive home as well that as of October 2024, City of Hamilton has had its credit rating raised from AA+ to AAA. And I think it's important that we, as we consider this budget deficit and moving forward, it's important that we operate within our means, but there's a lot of focus on cuts right now that I think needs to be recontextualized to help people understand what that actually means. In many cases, these cuts are very short-sighted and unnecessary, and many of the programs candidates are looking to cut will actually cost us far more in the long run. It's a kind of short-term gain for a long-term pain that it seems like a good idea to cut these things if we're entering financial issues, but it really doesn't take the whole context into consideration. If you cut housing programs, you get more people on the street. If you cut food programs, you get more people desperate for a meal. And cuts to social services makes life less tolerable for our neighbors and less safe for our communities. Maybe you save a couple grand, but then you have to spend twice that on fixing the damage your decisions cause. The recent IMFG report notes that city spending decisions have to be tied to revenue plans, and I will hold firmly to that principle, but I refuse to join the candidates that are looking to give Hamiltonians less. They want to cut away the services that all of us benefit from, services that often save us more money than the cost we would incur if they were to just do away with them. City services improve the quality of life not only for the least fortunate, but for everyone. We all benefit from solving the homelessness crisis. We all benefit from restoring strong public transit so we're not all stuck in traffic trying to get home after a long day of work. And I will defend keeping reserve funds healthy for emergencies and future capital costs rather than using them for operating shortfalls and any kind of planning inefficiencies like that. And I'm very much in favor of exploring new revenue sources. I do think that given the ongoing cost pressures, I support exploring any lawful new revenue tools for Hamilton, and studies have shown that cities can benefit massively from borrowing from the federal and provincial income taxes, such as an income or sales tax portion that could generate significant revenues for big cities. And while Ottawa and Queen's Park must approve such tools, I will be advocating for them every step of the way. and closer to home, we should stop losing money. The city's own budget report warns of a $100,000 deficit in 2025 just from the loss of marriage license fees alone. I would rather reform that process and similar ones like it now than have residents have to foot the bill later.
As Ward 8 counselor, you will have around $2 million a year in discretionary funds to allocate. How do you plan to manage these funds?
I think working with the residents of the ward, making sure that we understand their priorities, making sure that we understand how best and most efficiently to allocate those funds is key. And a lot of that is going to go into the road safety initiatives we have planned. A lot of it is going to go into trying to better zone regions and otherwise kind of make the housing crisis something that we can address directly. I think a lot of that is going to come down to simply input from the community, making sure that we are transparent about what we're doing, and we are constantly checking in to make sure that our priorities are in line with the people we're serving.
You're promising to improve City Hall. I'm feeling exhausted on this topic because I heard every candidate in the 2022 change election promise they were going to make City Hall transparent. If elected, you will have 1 year inside City Hall before the new council term begins in November 2026. How will you use this year to prepare an action plan on transparency for the next council term?
I couldn't agree more that this is a very, very important issue. We need to make sure the transparency is increased. We need to make sure that there's obviously a lot of reasons why people in power want to make sure that they can control the amount of information going out to the public. In many cases, we need to essentially remove that option from them, make sure that it is much more required and that they are made to be compliant with the current legislation that requires that they are disclosing that information. I think much of it comes down to just being able to hold people accountable, understand who is in favor of this transparency and who is not, make sure that people are on the record as far as whether they are supporting or opposing the motion to make sure that their voters are more aware of the information that they're dealing with. And if they're against it, then their voters should take note of that. And I think that that can play a key role in the next election cycle as well, the more that we can make people aware of who actually wants them to know what's going on.
Let's discuss development charges. Mississauga Mayor Carolyn Parrish was elected on June 10th, 2024. She formed a housing task force that first met on July 10th and issued a comprehensive report 6 months later in January 2025. The report's action plan was implemented by a unanimous vote of Mississauga City Council. It creates deep incentives for new market affordable and family housing and has time limits to ensure developers actually build. This proves municipalities can respond quickly to housing market conditions. What are your thoughts on development charges? Do you have goals for development charge reform, and how will you approach this issue if elected? Designed to maximize return without creating a tax burden for existing residents, and are time limited to ensure developers actually build. This proves it's possible for a municipal government to act quickly in response to current housing market conditions.
I think that it is very inspiring to see that we can see this kind of action going on in Mississauga. I love what they've been able to do with zoning reform and being able to use development charges as an incentive to further increase development and housing availability to their citizens. I think that being able to use our development charge reform to better address the situation and make sure that we are incentivizing the building of affordable housing, giving developers the reason and the means to help us address this housing crisis, because 95% of housing in Canada is built by private developers. We would be phenomenal to be able to have more social housing and such like that and reinvest in kind of similar builders and that sort of thing that we had back in shortly after World War II. But it's incredibly important that we incentivize the system that we have, that we build into our fee structure and our taxes, the means by which we can actually incentivize people to resolve the housing crisis. And I think Mississauga and their recent reforms have been phenomenal to reduce barriers and costs, make sure that new homes are cheaper to build and rent, and helping to manage demand without the kind of controversial sprawl that we see in other cities without this kind of planning. I think good planning balances growth and community input. And we need to be able to transform zoning to unlock more of that housing that really, as a city developing more density, we need to be able to expand into. I think streamlining approvals and permitting things like gentle density, where we're looking into allowing duplexes or triplexes on street zones for single homes, permitting things like garden suites, all of it can help to address the needs that we're facing without meaningfully kind of disrupting the lives of the people around them. And Mississauga was successful in creating 124,000 new units. There's no reason we can't do it here and improve our neighborhood vitality and protect our green space while we focus on the growth in those appropriate areas.
Road safety is a significant issue in Ward 8. Upper James is by far Hamilton's most dangerous road, with nearly every section significantly more dangerous than average for both motorists and pedestrians. What's your plan to address safety on Upper James? Does your plan include unpopular but necessary changes? And if so, how do you plan to implement them?
Absolutely. I have an Upper James corridor plan that is going to treat Upper James like the urgent priority that it is. My plan includes lowering the speed limit to 50 kilometers per hour or lower in school and residential sections, and enforcing it with cameras or police so that we can install more pedestrian-friendly infrastructure. I want to have more pedestrian crosswalks, refuge islands at crossings for people to be safe, and create protected bike lanes or sidewalk improvements along that corridor. And these changes are very, very important. They're in line with Hamilton's Vision Zero program, ensuring that people are going to be driving at an appropriate speed and reducing the likelihood of collision, pedestrian fatality, all sorts of those things. And to implement this, I'm going to be holding public meetings with residents and businesses, working with city engineers and urban planners to model traffic patterns, and also using our trial installations to essentially show the safety benefits of these changes. Over time, the data will speak for itself, and we'll be able to build more and more support. And I think the three key aspects that we're looking for throughout all of Hamilton are safe speeds to make sure that we lower default speed limits on dangerous streets and neighborhoods in line with the Vision Zero principles that are currently in place with council. And I think protection for vulnerable road users. We need to invest in infrastructure for pedestrians and cyclists everywhere. Hamilton's Vision Zero explicitly calls for addressing safety for vulnerable road users of all ages. And I will push to build protected bike lanes on key routes, continuous sidewalks through the gaps, and raised crosswalks near schools and shopping streets. And this will encourage active transportation, which is not only good for people's health and climate, but also foot traffic has been the greatest predictor of economic success within a region. So we will be able to separate people from their kind of, you know, stuck in car traffic that people, everyone hates, honestly. Nobody likes being stuck in their car. And I think the main driver for that is also going to be enforcement and our ability to utilize the data that the city has to address these in a highly precise and surgical manner. We need more traffic cameras and targeted enforcement at high-risk intersections. I will use the collision data to identify hotspots and demand immediate engineering fixes, such as better signage and signal timing. And together, with community education, like school crossing guards and safety campaigns, these measures will systematically reduce injuries and deaths on all of Hamilton roads and make all of our Hamiltonians much safer.
What is your overall plan to address road safety?
I think exactly that. Getting into safe speeds, making sure that we can minimize the amount of casualties as a result of people driving unsafely in those regions. Protecting vulnerable road users to increase crossing times from, I think previously it was suggested, from 1.2 meters per second to, I think, 0.07 meters per second. 0.7 meters per second, I should say. And on top of that, just using the data that Hamilton has been able to develop over the course of the last 10 years to address and surgically target the regions that need the most help for our road fixes.
Hamilton City Council meetings. Attendance, respect, and focus are all issues. I want to ask you about one specific issue. Councilors leaving, not attending, or not focusing attention on public delegations. What expectation will you set for yourself when it comes to listening to delegations as a councilor?
I think being present is one of the most important things. You need to take the time out of your day to make sure that you are listening to the people who are taking the time out of theirs. They want to be heard and they want to have these issues brought to the attention of their representatives. And if you are absent, I think, you know, you can watch recordings later or some such, but it gives the impression of a lack of care or otherwise just a failure to show up. My campaign and my serving as a Ward 8 councilor will not be characterized by that. I will be there. I will be listening. I will make sure that I am around for as many delegations as possible so that I can hear and make sure that I am responsive to the voices of Hamiltonians across the city.
Ontario's Municipal Act was amended to make mayors more powerful and more accountable as the head of council. How do you believe strong mayor powers have changed the role of councillors, and how do you see yourself effectively achieving your platform in cooperation with the mayor and the 14 other councillors?
It concerns me any time that we are moving away from more of a democratic situation to giving more of these top-down powers. I think it's incredibly important that the councillors and their wards be considered in any of these decisions being made. And I think that it is deeply unfortunate that these strong mayor powers are being utilized in the way that many of them are. I think it's incredibly important that we focus on increasing our representation of democracy and making sure that the people in each ward feel represented and heard effectively, and we don't diminish the power of the people who are in those positions to effectively advocate for their citizens.
What are two changes you will propose to improve city services?
So I think we have two major issues at the moment that I think we can address fairly quickly. First would be the modern online interaction. So right now, I'm going to try to help launch digital channels for city services. So right now, we have a large issue with people who are attempting to get city services, apply for permits, pay fines, or book appointments online. But many of these are in-person or paper-oriented services that can largely be moved onto online services. And this not only applies to conveniences, but captures the revenue that we've now lost to those inefficiencies that we're seeing with people going to other cities to obtain things like marriage licenses. I also want to make sure that we have faster permits and inspections, and that can be facilitated through these online portals. And I will seek to streamline processes like building inspections or business licensing. And this could mean adding more staff to reduce backlogs and setting maximum timelines for approvals so that we can ensure faster service that helps local businesses grow and improve resident satisfaction.
What are two changes you will propose to improve quality of life in Hamilton?
Number one that I hear at the door every day is affordable living and making Hamilton a green and healthy city again. Affordable living, Hamilton should be a place where people of all incomes can thrive. And I will be supporting building more rental and affordable housing and protecting renters. Now, for instance, the council can work with developers and nonprofits to create mixed income projects and use tools like inclusionary zoning or city housing fund. And by easing the cost of housing, we can give families more breathing room to reduce homelessness. And then for the green and healthy city, there are a lot of people I talk to who are very concerned about the climate, things like the green belt, making sure that we protect the natural beauty of Hamilton and what we have to offer. I will expand bike lanes and walking paths, plant more trees for shade and clean air, and I will support initiatives like community gardens, and I'll also be pushing for cleaner transit, making sure that we have electric buses, charging stations, and these changes, along with the improved safety measures I've mentioned earlier, make our city more livable and enjoyable for every one of our residents.
It's August 2026. I'm writing a review of the four-year council term that's just ending. What three words do you hope I will use to describe your 10 months as a councillor?
I think as a review of my first term and in line with my slogan, I definitely want people to be saying that we were strong, fair, and accountable. Strong and fair, I hope to earn the reputation that I made Hamilton stronger by improving our services and infrastructure, fairer by standing up for the underserved, and accountable by keeping my promises and being accessible to the public.
What experience has most motivated you to seek a seat on Hamilton City Council?
I've engaged with the council consistently for years now, where my professional and volunteer background directly has been oriented around supporting the goals I hope to achieve as a councillor. I led tenant advocacy with Hamilton Acorn. I ran national health programs, giving me budgeting and policy experience. And in student government, I oversaw budgets, student services. I've sat across the table from MPs and city staff advocating on healthcare and housing. I know how to interact with the government. I was just one of the delegates at the Ontario Healthcare Coalition with the Shadow Summit with the recent meeting of all the premiers up in Deerhurst. I've also taught community organizing and public policy. And all of this together means that I can hit the ground running on council, understanding budgets, leading meetings, building coalitions, and delivering the outcomes that Hamiltonians need.
Thank you. That's the end of the questions. Do you have any closing remarks you'd like to share?
Thank you so much, Joey. I really appreciate this opportunity to discuss my vision for Hamilton and Ward 8. If elected, I pledge to be a councillor who listens first, acts boldly, and works tirelessly for all of us. My commitment is to your neighborhood, your street, your finances, and your family's safety and future. Thank you for considering my answers, everyone, and thank you for taking part in our local democracy. Together, we can build a stronger, fairer Hamilton.
Thank you for joining us.